Hey there, I'm Star Master Jeff of the Dark Star Adventure Cast, a sci-fi actual play where every choice matters, every danger is real, and nothing stays buried in the dark between the stars. Follow the crew of the Scapegoat through heists, gang wars, and something ancient moving through the void. Critics call it lean, cinematic, and immersive. New episodes every other Tuesday at darkstaradventures.com, and keep following that signal.
Ray Corbin. If you look at the faded ink on my card, it says acquisitions and retrievals. That's just a fancy, dressed-up way of saying I'm a scavenger. I track down whatever's lost, stolen, or buried for anybody who can meet my price, and I try not to get eaten doing it. Out here in the San Francisco ruins, the fog is thick, the dead are hungry, and the living are even worse. Survival means keeping your mouth shut, your head down, and your .38 loaded. It's a miserable gig, but hey, someone's got to sweep the tomb.
We don't fight the ocean. We hit the bottom of the Lombard switchbacks like a runaway freight train. My lungs were burning, pulling in the freezing, fog-choked air in ragged gasps. Behind me, Penny sounded like a bucket of bolts being kicked down a fire escape. His tin plating banged against the heavy canvas as he fought to keep his footing on the slick bricks. At the base of the hill, the intersection of Leavenworth and Chestnut was a nightmare. The gunshot had done its work. The fog was thick, but the shadows within it were coalescing into a solid, shifting wall. The dead were pouring out of the Marina Flats, drawn by the dinner bell. Dozens of them, maybe more. Their collective moan was no longer a distant vibration. It was a deafening, wet rattle that vibrated right through the soles of my boots.
"Mr. Corbin!"
Penny yelled over the rising crescendo of the swarm, skidding to a halt beside me. He raised the bloody pipe wrench, his eyes darting frantically across the wall of rotting faces emerging from the mist.
"There are too many!"
"Don't swing!" I grabbed his canvas-padded shoulder, hauling him back. "You start swinging into a crowd that dense, your weapon gets stuck in the first skull you crack, and the rest of them pull you down. We don't fight the ocean, kid. We surf it." I scanned the immediate area. To our left, a sheer brick retaining wall. Straight ahead, the teeth of the swarm. To our right, a narrow service alley wedged between a gutted bakery and an old municipal trolley barn.
"Right! Move right!"
I shoved him toward the alley. We sprinted into the narrow gap just as the vanguard of the horde reached the intersection, their grasping hands scraping against the brickwork where we had been standing seconds before. The alley was choked with garbage, overturned crates, and the rusted husk of a commercial delivery truck blocking the far exit. We were boxed in. The dead began pouring into the mouth of the alley behind us, an unstoppable tide of rotting meat and snapping jaws. "The truck!" I barked, grabbing the heavy iron handle of the driver's side door. It shrieked in protest, but the rusted latch gave way. I practically threw Penny into the cab and scrambled up after him, slamming the heavy door shut just as the first rotter slammed his decaying fists against the glass.
"They're going to break the windows!"
Penny panicked, scrambling backward against the passenger door. The cab was instantly filled with the stench of our own terrified sweat and the pounding of dead hands against the metal chassis. "Let them knock," I said, grabbing the heavy rusted gear shift protruding from the floorboards. "The dead are stupid, Penny. They follow movement, and whatever makes the most noise. We just have to give them a bigger target." I threw my weight against the stick, hauling the transmission out of gear and forcing it into neutral. Then I kicked the emergency brake release hard with my heel. The alley was built on a slight incline, sloping down toward the cross street. For a second, nothing happened. Then, with a deafening, agonizing groan of protesting steel and seized axles, the massive truck began to roll backward. Without the engine running, the sheer mechanical noise was staggering. The rusted undercarriage shrieked, echoing brutally off the brick walls of the narrow alley. The heavy, rotting tires crushed wooden crates, shattered glass, and ground over the asphalt with a deep, rumbling crunch. The dead in the alley didn't step out of the way. Mindless and hungry, their attention instantly snapped from the cab to the massive, noisy, moving object carrying them. The truck crushed the first wave under its heavy bumper, the chassis bouncing sickeningly over bone and rotting flesh as it picked up speed down the slope. It burst out of the alley mouth and rolled blindly into the intersection, a rumbling avalanche of dead iron, taking the swarm right along with it. "Out!" I yelled over the grinding metal. I kicked the passenger side door open. We tumbled out of the cab just as the front end of the truck rolled past us, drawing the horde down Chestnut Street in a parade of snapping jaws and screaming rust. We hit the pavement hard, but we were completely ignored. The dead were blindly chasing the rolling siren into the fog. I hauled Penny to his feet. We had a 30-second window before the stragglers realized they'd been duped. "The street is too hot. We have to go under." I grabbed his arm and dragged him toward a heavy iron storm drain cover set into the gutter. It was massive, stamped with the city seal and rusted solid. I shoved my combat knife back into my boot and dug my fingers into the freezing mud around the rim. "Help me lift it, now!" Penny dropped his wrench, hooked his pale, trembling fingers under the iron grate, and heaved. The kid didn't have any muscle, but he had a reservoir of terrified adrenaline. With a sickening scrape of metal on concrete, we flipped the heavy cover over. A wave of putrid, stagnant air wafted up from the black hole. "Down," I ordered. Penny didn't hesitate. He grabbed his wrench, swung his legs over the lip, and dropped into the dark. There was a loud splash and a muffled gasp. I looked over my shoulder. The fog was parting again. The truck had crashed into a storefront down the block. The dead were turning back. I slid into the hole, grabbing the iron cover and hauling it back into place over my head. It landed with a heavy, final clang, plunging us into absolute pitch-black sensory deprivation. I dropped 5 feet and hit the water. It was freezing, rising instantly to my waist. The shock of the cold stole the breath from my lungs. I scrambled for my waterproof flashlight, clicking it on. The narrow beam cut through the gloom, illuminating a concrete maintenance tunnel. Roots pushed through cracks in the ceiling and the walls were slick with black algae. Penny was plastered against the curved wall a few feet away. His heavy canvas and tin armor was acting like an anchor, soaking up the freezing water. He was holding his pipe wrench above his head to keep it dry, his teeth chattering so violently I could hear them echoing down the pipe. "Welcome to the marina," I whispered, the sound bouncing eerily off the curved walls. "Keep your voice down. Water carries sound."
How deep does this go?"
he managed to stutter, shivering uncontrollably.
"Deep enough to keep us off the menu. Come on."
We waded forward, the water sloshing heavily against our thighs. The resistance of the water combined with the weight of Penny's soaked armor reduced our pace to an agonizing, exhausted crawl. Every step was a battle against the current and the cold. We had been moving for 10 minutes when the ceiling sloped downward, narrowing the tunnel. Above us, a section of the concrete was replaced by a wide iron street grating. Faint gray moonlight filtered down through the bars, casting a cross-hatched shadow across the black water. I clicked my flashlight off and held up my hand. Directly above us, not 3 feet from the tops of our heads, came the unmistakable sound of dragging feet. I looked up through the iron bars. A half-dozen pairs of rotting, shoeless feet were shambling across the grate. We were right under the main thoroughfare. I looked at Penny. The water had risen to his chest. The heavy tin plating was pulling him under. He had his chin tilted up, his lips blue, trying desperately to keep his mouth above the waterline. The panic in his eyes was absolute. If he slipped, if he thrashed to stay afloat, the splashing would draw every monster on the street directly to the grate above us. We'd be trapped in a cage, being clawed at from above while we drowned. He started to slip. His boots lost purchase on the slick algae-covered floor of the pipe. He sank an inch, the black water rising to his lower lip. He opened his mouth to gasp. I lunged forward, moving as silently through the water as I could. I clamped my leather-gloved hand directly over his mouth and nose and used my good arm to grab the heavy belt around his waist, physically holding him up. Penny's eyes widened in terror. He instinctively grabbed my wrist, his soaked canvas sleeves heavy as lead. "Don't move," I mouthed, locking eyes with him in the dim gray light. Above us, a pair of dead, rotting feet paused directly on the grate. A clump of dried mud and coagulated blood flaked off a decaying heel and dropped through the bars, splashing into the water inches from Penny's face. A low, wet groan echoed down the pipe. The rotter was lingering, testing the air. Penny's chest heaved under my hand. He was burning for oxygen. His grip on my wrist tightened to a painful degree. I held fast, bearing his weight, pressing him against the cold concrete wall. "Hold on, kid," I thought. "Just hold on." For 10 agonizing seconds, the world was nothing but the freezing black water, the burning in my own broken ribs, and the shuffling, horrifying proximity of the dead above us. Finally, the rotting feet dragged themselves forward and continued down the street. The groans faded into the fog. I waited another 5 seconds, then pulled my hand away from his mouth. Penny gasped a desperate, shuddering intake of air, trying to keep it as quiet as possible. I kept my grip on his belt, helping him to find his footing on the slick floor. "You okay?" I breathed, my voice barely carrying over the slow drip of water. He nodded slowly, wiping his face with a trembling, soaked sleeve. He looked up at the iron grate, then back at me. He was freezing, exhausted, and wearing 50 pounds of waterlogged garbage, but he hadn't panicked. He hadn't broken. "I'm fine," he whispered, his voice gaining a fraction of its strength back. He adjusted his grip on the wrench. "Are we close?" "Yeah, kid," I said, a grim kind of respect settling in my chest. "We're close."
Thank you. Thank you.